Ashura in Britain.
Part 2.
In the year 680 AD, in the middle of the dry desert of Karbala, a man and around 70 of his followers were surrounded by an army of several thousands.
They all knew, even the women and children in that camp knew, that the enemy was not only ready to fight, they were ready to kill.
He knew that he was going to get killed. On the night of Ashura, he told his companions that tomorrow all of us are going to be killed. So anyone who wants to leave, let him leave.
Over 1300 years have passed since this event, but Imam Hussein's brutal death is still commemorated every year. The day is known as Ashura, and remembering its message has spread across the world, including Britain. Why?
If we just let that message to be lost in the books of history, have we not betrayed Hussein? Have we not betrayed the grandson of the Prophet?
Karbala may have marked the end of Hussein's life as his heart stopped beating in the dry desert, but it was the birth of a powerful message. The message of a man who sought to rectify what had gone wrong. It is a story that has captivated the world.
For most people, it's very emotional. You can't really say add to it, except we should try and emulate Imam Hussein.
What we see in Karbala is a manifestation of the human spirit in its most fitri state, a yearning for justice. And so the events of Karbala, they don't only pull on our hearts, but they pull on our minds, they pull on our emotions.
The Quran criticizes Jews for killing their prophets, which history records that they killed many of their prophets. Criticizes the Jews for killing their prophets. And I think one of the criticisms to Muslim Ummah is that they killed someone like Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet, peace be on him.
I have a lot of sadness to think that he was the Prophet's grandson and that he was murdered by the Caliph of his time, and that it was an act of political violence. And was a senseless death in its way.
It's the most moving event, and it's an inspiration.
After Hussein was killed, people almost immediately began to sense his message. The first impact was felt in Kufa by those who had betrayed him or had turned back on their pledge in helping him. A large group of around 5,000 people who called themselves the Tawabun, the Repentant, realizing the enormity of what had happened, decided to take arms to fight against the Umayyads. The second impact was even larger and took place in Damascus, in the very palace of Yazid. Hussein's sister Zainab, who was captured along with the other women of Hussein's camp, began to publicize the news of Hussein's death. She also defended his cause so powerfully that those companions of the Prophet who were still alive, and even Yazid's household, were appalled by what had happened.
Well, the agony in Imam Hussein's story is that he was killed by a Muslim. He is the martyr who wasn't killed by a non-Muslim.
The impact that this event, this tragic event, had on Muslim community is tremendous. The shame of killing a person like Hussein ibn Ali for not paying allegiance
to a person like Yazid, not putting up any fight or anything like that, just for not paying allegiance.
The impact of Hussein's message didn't just affect the Umayyads, but also anyone in the future who would try to distort the Prophet's legacy of justice. It quickly became a tradition to relate accounts of the brutal treatment of the Prophet's grandson and to defend his cause. People who heard these accounts would sit and mourn.
People find when they come to listen to lectures, when they come to remember Imam Hussein alayhi salam, when they come to remember what he went through, what he said, they find upliftment, they find spiritual gaining, they find motivation and inspiration for them to be good Muslims, to be role model Muslims in society, and to preach Islam and to understand Islam better.
In the vast expanse of the Muslim world, people would remember Hussein with grief and compassion. Seeing this, the Umayyads attempted to mark the day of Ashura as a day of celebration for their victory over Hussein. But then, something happened that was to shake the Umayyads to their very core. A trend was developing. Now, even those who had inherited the custom of celebrating Yazid's victory were beginning to commemorate Hussein's defiance. This has now reached Britain.
Everyone's come here to celebrate and commemorate the death of Imam Hussein and to remember him, and this is our call to the world that we'll never forget Imam Hussein. And he stood against terrorism that day, and we're today standing against terrorism with all this walking and all this marching.
We are inspired by the example of people like Imam Hussein and the martyr. We're inspired not to give in to evil. We're inspired to resist. We're inspired to oppose and fight and combat evil. And so to me, that is very meaningful, very important, very significant.
I think it's something strange, which I don't think is ever going to happen again, as you would not expect 72 people to go in war with over like 20,000 people. And it's just the way that they hold on as much as they could without any war or anything, and they just saved our religion.
The way him and his family were butchered, like, you could use the word butchered really, the way they were butchered in Karbala, it's just so heart-wrenching.
As the commemoration spread, Hussein's name became etched in history. He became the symbol of justice. And visiting his place of martyrdom became a ritual. During the Abbasids, the second Muslim dynasty, visiting Hussein's place of martyrdom became so popular that in 850 AD, the Caliph Mutawakkil ordered his forces to destroy Hussein's tomb, to punish anyone who visited it, and to wipe Hussein's name from the pages of history.
If we do not pass on this message by the commemoration of this event, I think we have betrayed Hussein, as the people of Kufa betrayed Hussein. And certainly we do not want to betray the grandson of the Prophet. And we have the duty of passing on that message.
There's nothing in Islam or in the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, his family, that prohibits remembering him and his family. You have gatherings, people remembering the great exploits of certain companions as well. So people will gather together to hear about to learn and hear about the lives of the companions. So I can't quite see what is the problem for gathering together to learn and hear about the heroic actions of his own family.
Attempts to wipe Hussein's name from history was proving difficult. It seemed to only add to people's sympathy for him. Then, in 963 AD, everything changed. In Baghdad, people rose up and poured into the streets, beating themselves and wailing for Hussein.
Because of the passion and feeling of the community, Muslim community, this was kept alive. And now it has spread everywhere.
Soon, artificial fountains were set up in cities, towns, and villages to remember the thirst of Hussein and his family. People would drink from these fountains and would remember Hussein with tears in their eyes. In the 14th century AD, during the Mongolian Timurid dynasty, the commemoration of Ashura had spread to the vast Sunni population of Khorasan. Also, a man called Mullah Hussein Kashifi, arguably one of the most popular Sunni scholars of his time, became famous for his book, Razatul Shuhada. This book depicted the graphic events of Karbala, albeit with exaggeration.
The whole commemoration ceremony in Iran is called traditionally Rozakhani, that is reciting Roza, referring to the book of Mullah Hussein Kashifi, Roza to Shuhada. And nowadays, of course, people here, we go to Rozakhani session, that's reciting Roza. They don't know what does it mean.
People had now developed an unstoppable passion for Hussein. Exaggerations gradually crept into all aspects of the story, the ceremony, and the mourning.
We shouldn't just make this as a passion play. We have to convey the message of Hussein, peace be upon him. We have to discuss what he meant.
Today, when people do gather together, it's not just going over the past again. It's bringing the whole spirit of the event into our lives.
Various cultures and local customs began to influence new traditions of mourning. From people hitting their heads with swords, wounding their shoulders, and walking on hot coal. Islamic scholars condemned these practices as unnecessary. But it just didn't stop. Today, the centuries-old tradition of commemorating Ashura has spread across the world, particularly in Indonesia, Egypt, Turkey, Iran, Kuwait, and Bahrain, as well as throughout America and Europe, including Britain. It seemed that Ashura's message was global.
I think the message has a universality, because the experience of suffering and martyrdom are common to all sorts of great religions, maybe all of them.
We are talking about a version of Islam that touches the hearts of the people, and what attracted them in the subcontinent towards Islam was not a sword. That marching procession would inform the people of the entire story of Karbala and how it happened back in those days.
We have had many examples of non-Muslims, and especially the Hindus, who believe that Hussein is not for the Muslims only. Hussein is for us. Hussein Sabka. He says, Hussein Mera, Hussein is mine. Hussein Tera, Hussein is yours. Hussein Rabka, Hussein is of Allah. Hussein Sabka, Hussein is for everyone.
That the Imam, on the way to his marching with Karbala, invoked the figure of Yahya ibn Zakariya. In Christianity, we call him John the Baptist, who suffered martyrdom at the hand of a wicked man because of his righteousness.
The comparisons between the suffering of Imam Hussein and Jesus Christ were inevitable. In countries around the world, this has led to opportunities for Muslims and Christians to unite in the remembrance of these commanding figures. More recently in Britain, organisers of Islamic ceremonies have invited Christians to their programmes to commemorate Imam Hussein.
There were about 9 priests in that programme. And when I recite first suffering of Jesus and after that suffering of Imam Hussein, the night was Shabi Ashur, the 10th night, Muharram. So many Christians, they were weeping. Even some priests, they were weeping. In the church, we finished program at 1:30 night. That priest came and said, it's wonderful, never happened in church.
To share that what suffering means to me in my head intellectually, but also in my heart, what it means to me as a Christian and as a human being. And then to hear someone like Maulana Kazmi speak about the suffering of Imam Hussein and the suffering of Jesus as well, I just think it's really very, very important.
As we engage with Jesus' sufferings, then that is something which provides similarity with the Ashura commemorations.
The real life is a spiritual life. Look, the suffering of Imam Hussein and suffering of Jesus. We heard suffering of Jesus. How the 72 people in Karbala, in Iraq,
that sort of demonstrative showing of solidarity, yes, with the historical figure, with Imam Hussein, but also one with each other, can be a very powerful experience.
The emotion is terribly important, and for whatever reason, sometimes we don't let it come out, maybe because we're being too British and we're keeping a stiff upper lip.
Your religion is not a matter of a private sphere. It's not something which you do for an hour on Sunday morning. It's something that affects your whole life. And so I'm all in favour of these great events being commemorated in a public setting.
In the last 40 years in Britain, the remembrance of Imam Hussein has grown. From charities, street processions to conferences, keeping Imam Hussein's name alive seems to be an important activity.
Imam Hussein Council, we are blessed. We've always had the participation from the heads of the states. We've had scholars from all the different religious persuasions, and we've had people from all the different walks of life, all of whom wanted to find out, all right, about Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Back in 1974, when I started, the community in London was very small. But there was a need for a center where the commemoration of Imam Hussein's madnesses must take place. So the number of people grew.
One of the biggest suffering which Imam Hussein and his family encountered was the thirst. And therefore, it is our moral duty and obligation to see that each and every family at least get a decent, clean water for the drinking. And Alhamdulillah, Lady Fatima Salamullah Alayha Trust has so far built over 125 wells.
Ashura is no longer for me, or the events of Karbala is no longer about a specific day of the year. It's actually imbued in the work that I do, both as an activist and as a writer. I find those events very meaningful and very powerful, and a huge explanation of what it means in Islam to struggle, and also what it means to really seek unity, a kind of divine unity and the unity of humanity.
I remember years I was talking with the police about organization of this session, and he has said we have to change 50 main road for this procession, which is important. And we have a very, very clear message from the procession for all people around the world, which is means justice and truth all the time is alive.
We have started about 500, and now, alhamdulillah, it's right about 4,000. And inshallah, every year it's going to increase.
It shows that Imam Hussein's religion is still alive, and the belief is still there. That's what this march is about.
Ashura is not just for a Muslim in Iran. It's not just for a Muslim in Iraq. It's for a Muslim and non-Muslim all over the world. I was speaking to my manager yesterday, and she's English. And I said to her, Ashura is not just for Muslims. Gandhi has talked about Ashura. Charles Dickens, a famous English author, has talked about Ashura.
I was very worried today because it was cold, it was raining, and I was sitting at home, very warm, comfortable. And I was worried because I thought the brothers and sisters wouldn't come out. So I thought I really must make the effort, show solidarity and come here. And I'm so cheered. Every year it's grown. It's got bigger and bigger every year. Despite it being so cold, I don't think I can shout over this, actually. This is too loud for me. We should record this. This is fantastic in the middle of London. And it's a great opportunity to emphasize that Imam Hussein... Thank you. I'm a surgeon. I've been living in the UK for 37 years. It's my home. I'm very comfortable here. And I use the teachings of our Prophet and our Imams, and particularly Imam Hussein and his stand today, 1400 years ago, to guide me. I think it's a principle for us that justice is essential, and you can't live your life without that.
Starting from Prophet Noah, and then by Abraham, peace be with them, and then Moses, and then Christ, and then last of them, Prophet Muhammad, peace be with all of them. The grandchild of Prophet Muhammad was the best of the examples. The spirit of Imam Hussein is about love, love for humanity, love for mankind, wherever you found them.
I come in every year, and I just love it. When I was a kid, my dad used to take me, and I enjoyed him. And for Imam Hussein, I do everything.
I have got a role to play as a Muslim, as a Shia Muslim, as someone who is believing in you have to stand for the truth, and always you stand for the truth, you defend it no matter what. It's unconditional, always you stand for the truth.
They gave their life to keep our religion, and that's why we're here, and everyone comes here every time, every year, and I hope every year will be the same as well.
It is difficult to find events in history that have been kept so alive. For many people, even hearing the name Hussein gives a sense of hope.
Wherever in my life I feel hopeless, I feel dissuaded, and I feel a bit, if I'm in a low, Imam Hussein alayhi salam is the name that provides me with hope.
Hussein's death has made people think about his life, his character, and how Muslims should spread the legacy of his grandfather.
When somebody went and told the Prophet that, Ya Rasulullah, I'm spreading your message, and the Prophet says, don't do it. He said for the second time, and the Prophet says, don't do it. He said, Ya Rasulullah, I'm spreading your message of Islam. And the Prophet says, don't do it. And he was shocked. And the Prophet said, change your manners. Let your characters be such that a person should come and ask you, excuse me, which religion are you following the characters of? And that should be the message we should continue. Not only the day of Ashura, not during the days of 12 days of Muharram, not during the months of Muharram and Safar only, but 365 days.
Now that Ashura has reached Britain, Hussein's message continues to spread. He is remembered as the great man, the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. And he gave his life to uphold justice and to defend humanity. What Hussein did on that day, over 1300 years ago, was to speak to the world. And the world heard him.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Thank you for joining us here today. We at The Key would like to express our condolences to our listeners on the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, alayhi salam. Today we're going to be looking at a question that often is asked by people regarding the event of Karbala. That question is this. We know that history tells us that the people of Kufa, they wrote to Imam Hussein, they wrote him letters inviting him to Kufa, and they told him in these letters that they were with him and they would support him, and that they were ready to assist him in his uprising. This is the reason why Imam Hussein left his home and he journeyed towards Kufa, and the event of Karbala took place. The question arises is this: how could a people who were so ready to assist Imam Hussein, who were so eager to help him, suddenly change and turn against him? The answer to this question is this, that history tells us that these people of Kufa, yes, in the beginning they were very eager and willing to assist the Imam and help him. At the same time, they were good people, but at the same time they had certain evil traits, certain vices and bad qualities. Some of these were that, first of all, they were cowardly, and secondly, they were greedy. Now, Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, this person who was an enemy of the family of the Prophet, came and he threatened them and said that if the army of Syria reaches Kufa and finds a person in the city who has not pledged his allegiance to Yazid and to me, then his life is not secure, and he will be killed. So all of these people, these followers of the Imam, who had written him these letters, when they were threatened with death, they came face to face with death, they turned on Imam Hussein and they took back their allegiance that they had pledged to Imam Hussein, and they pledged allegiance to Yazid. In this way, the city of Kufa, the rebellion of the city of Kufa was subdued, and then the Imam, of course, the Imam before this, he had sent his cousin, his representative, Muslim ibn Aqil, there, and these people, they turned Hazrat Muslim over to Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, and he was martyred, and then the rest of the story, as you know, goes that Imam Hussein was stopped. He decided not to continue further on towards Kufa. He was stopped in Karbala, and he was martyred there. So these two evil qualities led to their change of heart, and these are two evil qualities that any person willing to assist, who seeks to assist and help the path of the Ahlul Bayt and the family of the Prophet, these should be eradicated from them so that they can further this cause and help the Aimmah alayhi wasalam in their cause and in their purpose. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were examining the treachery of the people of Kufa and its causes. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Hosseiniyah.
his path from IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, wa bihi nasta'in.
Dr. Fakh Rohani.
In the beginning, I should like to express my deepest condolences on the 12th day of Muharram and the martyrdom of the fourth infallible Imam Ali ibn Hussein al-Sajjad alayhi salam. On the day of Ashura, just some hours or even some minutes before the martyrdom of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam intended to part with his beloved son, Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam gave him some instructions. Then Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam indicated it in this way. O my son, O my dear son, I advise you a statement which my father gave me when approaching death and that he received in return from his father. O my dear son, this is the wise saying. O my dear son, never commit any crime against a person who has no supporter save Allah. We find that the fourth infallible Imam, Ali ibn Hussein al-Sajjad alayhi salam, was the next infallible Imam after Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. So why Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam recommended Imam al-Sajjad not to commit any oppression about and in the case of anybody else? One of the solutions, one of the answers to such a question is that by way of addressing Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam, in fact Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam intended to teach all of us something very fundamental and determining. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam related it from his father Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam that nobody is allowed to do any harm, to impose any oppression on anybody who has no helper but Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is a very high and very significant moral lesson that we may take from Imam al-Hussein on the day of Ashura. It indicates that in such circumstances, nobody is allowed to ignore high human values. Elsewhere, on the day of Ashura, we find that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam addressed the enemy forces who were approaching the encampment not to commit that crime. And in his statements, Imam al-Hussein salam indicated in this way, I am the one who is fighting you, and you've decided to kill me. The women have done nothing wrong, so prevent your offenders from attacking my haram, that is family, so long as I am alive. It means that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam intended to change the battlefield into a classroom of high moral standards. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam wasn't simply a political leader against another or Umayyad political leader. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was the Imam of humanity. He was the Imam, not a king, nor a ruler, or not an emir. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was the personality who intended to teach high moral standards to anybody who was going and who was entitled to receive those high moral teachings, even if the class was going to be held on the battlefield in such a horrible day as the day of Ashura.
In the limelight.
Amnesty International, in a recently released report, said the Biden administration has shamefully continued the Trump administration's policy of misusing the Title 42 public health authority to block and expel people at the border, recklessly endangering lives. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Kenny Stancil Ryder. This article is published under the heading, "There is no excuse. Amnesty slams Biden over skyrocketing ICE detentions and more than 400,000 expulsions." Stay tuned for more. The Biden administration's treatment of refugees, asylum seekers, and immigrants not only falls short of expectations, but is in urgent need of course correction, particularly its growing reliance on mass detention and widespread denial of access to people requesting protection at the U.S. southern border. Amnesty International USA argues in a new report released recently. President Joe Biden assumed office pledging a fair and humane immigration system, placing racial justice and human rights at the heart of his vision, begins Amnesty's report. Needs improvement, a progress report on the Biden administration record on making the United States a safe refuge. His promised agenda was a stark contrast to that of former President Donald Trump's administration, which used xenophobia to justify punitive and cruel policies that dismantled access to protection for many people. Nevertheless, the Biden administration has yet to act boldly to undo the Trump administration's harm and restore humanity in how the U.S. treats refugees, asylum seekers, and immigrants, says the report. It comes just days after Vice President Kamala Harris discouraged would-be Central American migrants attempting to escape poverty, violence, and extreme weather, factors that are inseparable from decades of U.S. intervention in the region, including the promotion of neoliberal policies and genocidal right-wing dictatorships, from fleeing to the U.S. Researchers at Amnesty analyzed the Biden administration's approach to six components of the immigration system: immigration detention, access to asylum at the border, unaccompanied children, climate displacement, refugee protection, and temporary protected status. Most alarmingly, the administration needs to immediately reverse its direction on immigration detention, where it is rapidly going backwards, and fully restore access to asylum at the U.S. southern border, where it continues to maintain the Trump administration's policy of blocking and expelling people at the border. Failure to act and course correct is a betrayal to people seeking safety. Emphasizing that the drastic rise in the number of detained people reflects how the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, is reverting back to a blanket use of detention for people arriving at the border. The report notes that shortly after President Biden took office, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, reported detaining 13,860 people on February 5th. As of June 18th, the number of people ICE reported detaining has skyrocketed 82% to 25,238. His proposed budget for fiscal year 2022 funds detention space for 32,500 beds. Returning to Obama administration levels of detention is not progress. It is history repeating itself. In addition, the report points out the Biden administration has shamefully continued the Trump administration's policy of misusing the Title 42 Public Health Authority to block and expel people at the border recklessly, endangering lives. There is no public health rationale to treat immigrants and asylum seekers differently, and it is causing irreparable harm to them, the authors wrote. The welcoming of unaccompanied children at the border while continuing the expulsion of families and individuals has created family separation. The report states, between March 2020 and May 2021, the government summarily expelled nearly 875,000 people, particularly affecting black immigrants and asylum seekers. The Biden administration has expelled over 400,000 of those people. This misuse of Title 42 continues despite objections by CEC officials and against the recommendations of public health experts. All of this was entirely unnecessary and violates U.S. obligations to uphold the right to seek asylum and not forcibly return individuals to a place where they would be at risk of serious human rights harm. According to Amnesty, recent statements suggest the Biden administration will continue to rely on mass detention for people arriving at the border, particularly when it ceases to misapply the Title 42 public health quarantine to block access to safety at the border. The report notes the Biden administration must act much faster to move children from these emergency intake sites and close them down altogether. Emergency care is not suitable for the long term. It is a stopgap measure for discrete, short periods. In addition, the report notes the Biden administration continues to misuse the Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act to immediately return almost all unaccompanied Mexican children to Mexico. CBP is failing to adequately consider the protection needs of Mexican children by forcibly returning them and belaying the administration's commitment to welcome children seeking safety. The human rights organization also calls on the Biden administration to more robustly grant humanitarian protection through temporary protected status, TPS, to protect people already in the U.S. from forced return to their countries of origin because of ongoing armed conflict, extraordinary and temporary conditions, and environmental disasters. Nearly half a year in, the administration has still not delivered on change that has not only been promised, but is of the utmost urgency. Dennis Bell, researcher for refugee and migrant rights at Amnesty International USA, said in a statement, "There is no excuse that can get the United States government out of its human rights obligations. While systematic reform that respects human rights means explicitly addressing the racism underlying the U.S. immigration system," authors of the report wrote, "current policies that perpetuate deterrence, detention, and deportation do the opposite and must be eliminated to end the systematic harms against black and brown communities. For each of the six immigration policy arenas examined in the report, Amnesty made specific recommendations. Some of the group's proposed solutions include immediately stop expelling individuals and families under Title 42, end the use of arbitrary mass detention, and incorporate a presumption of liberty in custody determinations, with asylum seekers and immigrants allowed to live in the community. Supported by sponsors and community-based programs operated by nonprofits to assist individuals in navigating the immigration process. Release people held in immigration detention through an affirmative file review process with a presumption of liberty, prioritizing people who are most at risk of harm in custody, including families and children, HIV-plus individuals, pregnant women, and those at heightened risk of contracting COVID-19. Phase out IC contracts with private prison companies and county jails. End family detention and close all three family detention centers. Continue to urgently address conditions at emergency intake sites and raise the standard of care to meet children's best interest, while implementing changes to safely release them faster from such sites, and communicating a transparent plan to stop their use altogether and ensure that unaccompanied Mexican children are given fair and meaningful access to asylum, as all unaccompanied children and people seeking safety should be and not turned back, with summary and inadequate considerations of their protection needs.
This is A to Z. Today's lesson, the Kufan mentality. The people of Kufa, that is, those who, after receiving the news of the death of Muawiyah the oppressor, gathered in the house of Suleiman ibn Surah de Khudai, delivered speeches, took into consideration the position of the Muslims at that time, and wrote a letter to Imam from that very place. And similarly, those who visited Muslim, the representative of Imam, after his arrival in Kufa, and took oath of allegiance to him in his capacity of the special representative of the Imam of the time, did not, in fact, intend to tell lies and deceive their Imam, and to provide means for his martyrdom and the captivity of the members of his family. Truly speaking, their intentions were quite good at that time. They deemed the caliphate of a person like Yazid, and that too after 50 years of the death of the Holy Prophet, to be shameful and inadmissible for the world of Islam, and did not consider anyone among all the Muslims to be more competent and more deserving than Hussein ibn Ali, the son of the Holy Prophet. They thought that they had always rendered him assistance and would continue to do so in all circumstances, and would bear all hardships to achieve their divine object. They turned out to be liars and forgot what they had been thinking about themselves earlier. Let's take a short break and draw some lessons from this historical account as we come back.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله
وعلى الأرواح.
Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing the Kufan mentality. And we said that the people of Kufa who pledged allegiance at the hands of Muslim wrote the letters to Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and they were inviting Imam to come and establish truth and justice in the society. They were initially sincere when they were writing those letters and when they were pledging those oath of allegiance. So what happened afterwards is what we're trying to understand. Brothers and sisters, the attitude of the people who really wished that Imam Hussein alayhi salam should come at the helm of affairs and Bani Umayyah should be deprived of the Islamic government underwent such a change that although Muslim bin Aqil was keeping himself aloof and seldom met the people, he was obliged to shift from the house of Mukhtar to that of a well-known and powerful person named Hani ibn Urwa. His supporters used to visit him there secretly. So why in the world would Muslim bin Aqil, the representative of the infallible Imam, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, make this move? Because he did see the disloyalty of some people. Because he did see that even those who are claiming to be our friends and supporters, they are conspiring against us. The conditions in Kufa at the time indicated that all the letters which had been sent to Imam Hussein and the promises made with him were mere lies and could no longer be relied upon. Ibn Ziyad succeeded in locating the place where Muslim was then residing. How did that all happen? It was because of the fear of losing this world that all of those people, they turned against Muslim, or a heavy majority to say the least, because of the fear of losing this world. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
But anyone stay here won't be left tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence fills the air.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent. And FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Heartbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.